Is this someone's laptop? Or is this... Okay.
Yes, please leave it.
Okay. Just making sure. May it please the court, Jennifer Winkler, on behalf of David Birch, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Peremptory challenges are an important state-created means to the constitutional end of an impartial jury in a fair trial. That's from State versus St. Cal, or however you say it, one of the many, many opinions in that case. So the trial court got this wrong legally, it got it wrong factually.
Are you suggesting then that this is a constitutional issue?
No, because the cases clearly say that it is a means to a constitutional end. The means itself is not constitutional under Rivera and the cases leading up to Rivera versus Illinois. However,
the issue wasn't raised below? This issue with regard to peremptory challenges was not raised below?
I'm sorry, I don't accept that at all, Your Honor, that it wasn't raised below. As we stated in either the opening or the reply brief or both or all of our briefs forever and ever, defense counsel strongly argued to defend her peremptory challenge on the at least the second step. She gave a prima facie, not absolutely race-neutral explanation. So she's trying to keep this juror. This isn't...
She did not object to the procedure that the trial court set up, though.
Well, that's a good question, and it's something that King County and prosecutors everywhere raise. They raise waiver in a way that defendants raise, I think, issues of arguable merit. I think that the state often raises waiver of arguable merit, and I think this is one of those occasions.
Did you object to the procedure below or not?
Well, I think that the procedure, which is, there's been no error at that point. What the court says is, it's a little bit vague. If I see someone that's clearly from a minority group and I don't see a basis for you to exercise a peremptory challenges against them, then you do, I'm probably going to ask you about that, okay? And I'm going to be looking for a really good reason that I observed as to why the person is leaving us. So I don't think it's clear that there's a Batson error here yet. Like in, I think, Evans or Vreen, I think the defense counsel says, so we're just going to, you know, we're not following Batson here. And so I'm not sure if the state or this court is saying that that would have been enough. Is that an objection? I believe that this is preserved because, I know this court doesn't care what I believe, this is preserved because she is arguing in support of her choice to excuse. So if there's either an error in collapsing the test, that's a legal error, there's a factual error as to the second part of the Batson test. And so when she's defending her decision to excuse this person...
She's not arguing against the procedure. The issue really before us, and the only issue, is that whether or not the trial judge got it right when she denied your client the right to exercise that peremptory challenge.
Your Honor, I believe if this court was to engage in that kind of analysis, I believe we would win, number one. But number two, I think that's an overbroadening of the waiver concept because this is really taking the Strine case, the Fagaldi case, and expanding it because the key is to, and I think Division Two has been particularly clear about this recently, the key is to have the trial judge fix the error when there is time to fix the error in time so that we're not here in the Court of Appeals making this argument for the first time. Now, if defense counsel had kept quiet and said, oh, you know what, you're right, you know, this is a minority juror, you said that, you know, you're going to make me, you know, maybe think twice about this, and she said, okay, I guess so, you know, I guess we'll keep her, she seems all right, that would be the Fagaldi situation, laying back and gambling on the verdict. We don't have anything like that here. I'm going to get a drink of water. But even if we get to the second part of the test, there's a clear error here. So instead of de novo, we're under the clear error standard of Wright and the other cases. The trial judge just got this wrong. She missed things that juror number 15 said about her participation in CrossFit. She said, I'm a CrossFit addict. And that's exactly the kind of thing that defense counsel should be fixating on, because this is a Washington Athletic Club member. This is someone who, as she says, has a degree of personal stringency. These are the kind of things that peremptory challenges are intended for. This is not proxy for race. This is nothing like that going on here. And so when the judge makes this ruling, it's wrong legally and it's wrong factually. It's clear error under Wright. So I guess that moves to the next question, which is because there has been a legal error and there has been a factual error here, what's the remedy? And following
So what you went to the factual error. What's the legal error?
The legal error is collapsing the Batson test under this court's decision in Evans.
I thought you said that this wasn't like Evans or Breann.
I said as far as what defense counsel said exactly when the court announced what the court was going to be doing. And I believe
we're back to the procedure.
We're back to the procedure. I believe that's error because that's a collapsing of the Batson test under Evans. And cases say that when the court's raising a Batson error sua sponte, it needs to be particularly careful. And so if we're going to require an explanation before there's a prima facie case of purposeful discrimination, that's collapsing the test under this court's decision in Evans. And the court said no. And then the court also said...
But you clearly said that this is not like Evans.
In that one respect, Your Honor.
In which respect?
In the respect that the Evans attorney said to the court, oh, I guess we're just going to forget about Batson. Or there's this comment like that in either Breann or Evans where I believe that the state would then say that was enough for this not to be a waiver of the legal error that occurred here. I'm arguing the factual error and the legal error have been preserved, but certainly the factual error.
Okay, so just to be clear before you sit down, the legal error is the same as in Evans then. You're arguing that there was a collapsing of the standard.
Oh, yes, I am. Yes.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Ian Eath, representing the respondent, the state of Washington, in this case. The state is asking you to affirm Mr. Birch's convictions because, number one, he has waived this issue by failing to object below, and two, because he cannot show clear error in this situation. I think it's interesting to note that the word Batson doesn't appear in the verbatim report of proceedings at all in the course of this discussion.
Well, that doesn't matter. I mean, I think it's clear the court's procedure was meant to address Batson charges.
That's true. I'm talking about waiver. I'm talking about when the defendant, Mr. Birch, had the opportunity to stand up and object to, A, the procedure that the trial court employed and announced ahead of time that it was going to employ, and, B, when the trial court demanded of Mr. Birch a race-neutral explanation for his peremptory challenge. Mr. Birch makes plenty of rational and reasonable suppositions about what might have been in trial counsel's mind at the time that Mr. Birch exercised number 3 peremptory challenge on juror number 15. The problem is that now is not the time to make those reasonable arguments about what was in defense counsel's mind. The time was then. And our courts place a tremendous amount of deference on the trial judge's ability to evaluate the credibility of defense counsel's explanation for the peremptory challenge and make an on-the-scene, on-the-spot determination about whether the supposedly race-neutral explanation that is being offered is credible and whether it's true versus pretextual. And that's what occurred in this case.
So let me take you back to the legal argument. Assuming that we reach that, how is this procedure that this judge is using any different from Evans?
Well, number one, I would point out that the procedure is very different from Evans, because if you go look at Evans, the defense counsel actually objected.
Well, other than that, you're just back to your same argument.
Sure.
Look at the substance of the procedure.
Number two, it's true that what the trial judge did in this particular circumstance may have been very much like Evans.
I have a hard time seeing how it's different. That's why I'm asking.
It may be the same. Problem is we don't know, Your Honor.
What do you mean we don't know?
The problem is we don't know how this trial judge is thinking it was different than Evans, because Mr. Birch never challenged
the challenge. Well, okay, you're back again to the challenge. Let's set aside the challenge. Let's just look at the procedure.
Right.
We have the procedure in Evans. We clearly rejected that procedure.
Yes.
And now we have what looks like to me to be the same procedure. So tell me how it's different.
I actually have no argument with you on that point.
Okay.
I think that this trial judge may have been not completely within the current case law on how to approach Batson issues.
And so is your argument of waiver based on the fact that the defendant didn't stand up and object at that time and say, Your Honor, you're moving too fast, you got to go backwards, and according to Evans, you know, you have to
what should have happened,
say something else than what you said.
And because the reason why the record is so devoid of an ability to really analyze what the trial judge was doing here is because what Mr. Birch should have done is say, Your Honor, I object. You don't have a reason to ask me to explain my prima facie, my peremptory challenge. That would have required the trial judge to say, well, actually, I do. And the reason is X, Y, or Z. Then we would have a record about what actually prompted this judge to say, you know, this peremptory challenge seems like it might be race-based.
Well, but the court's saying that was premised on the court's procedure that we've already agreed was flawed.
Perhaps, but we don't know. If the court had been, if defense counsel would have said, hey, you're not following the Batson procedure properly, I have a right to make a peremptory challenge, and you don't have a right to ask me unless you've seen something to indicate a racial basis. Then the court would have been required and may have followed up, or I'm sure she would have, followed up with, well, here's what gives me pause about this peremptory challenge. We don't know that, so we can't analyze it now, and we can't sit back at the appellate level and decide whether this trial court clearly erred. It's just impossible from this record because Mr. Birch didn't object.
To the procedure.
To the procedure. So what we have now is...
So what's the more recent case law that a trial court should be looking at?
Well, the more recent case law suggests or says that if you don't object to the prima facie reason and you go ahead and say, okay, here's my race-neutral reason, that the whole prima facie issue becomes moot. That's the current case law on this issue. So because Mr. Birch acquiesced to the trial court's insistence for a reason, that...
Another word for waived.
Exactly. Then we go to whether or not the trial court plainly erred in determining that the explanation that Mr. Birch offered was credible or not. And that's something that the U.S. Supreme Court time and again has said, that we must give great deference to the trial court because the trial court was there, the trial judge was there, to see everything, to hear everything, to look at this juror. For example, the record doesn't say for sure how many minorities were on this jury. All we know about is juror number 15. It doesn't. We don't know anything about the what was going on in that courtroom. And the other reason too is because in order to give the notion that stems from Batson any real meaning, we have to afford the trial judges the trust and the deference and the ability to make those judgments without having to worry, am I just going to tube this entire trial here? Because if they have to worry that making a Batson determination is going to tube the entire trial, making it meaningless because of automatic reversal, then the trial judges are going to err on the side of allowing the peremptory challenge, even when it seems to them that somebody is being removed from the jury and losing their right to serve as jurors because of their racial makeup. The last thing I want to address just briefly, even though I don't think your honors should reach this issue, is the issue of harmless error. And I would just note that because counsel has conceded that this is not a constitutional issue, then I think that fairly well admits that the Vereen rule, if you will, doesn't really have any real legal legs anymore, given the decision in Rivera.
So in this case, then, we've got the court, if we wanted to be careful, I guess, finding a prima facie case out of an abundance of caution. Is that?
Yes, very much like the name of the case escapes me, but that's
is it Thomas?
Directly on point with, I believe, Hicks, I believe, which was exactly the case there, where the trial court was making a prima facie case.
So the court found that there was a prima facie case, and then defense counsel, as here, made an objection to the excusing the juror based on an articulation of reasons why, and the court says, so we need not reach the issue.
That's my understanding, but I don't think that it's quite the same here, because I don't believe, the state doesn't believe that simply offering a race-neutral explanation is equivalent to objecting to the trial court's insisting upon a race-neutral example.
Well, how do you characterize it?
I characterize it as acquiescing and the exact opposite of objecting.
Well, it's not acquiescing. It's not acquiescing in the challenge. I mean, obviously, defense counsel saying, no, do not excuse this juror. That's not acquiescing.
Well, defense counsel is not really saying that, I think. I think defense counsel is saying, well, here's my reason.
There are reasons not to.
There's a reason why I don't think I'd like to have this juror on my panel, because she was in a sorority, for example. But that's not the same as, I insist on my right to this.
Well, you're talking about procedure again.
Well, true. But I believe in this case the trial court was in the best position to determine what was going on, and the state asks you to affirm Mr. Birch's conviction.
Thank you. All right. So on pages 10 and 11 of my brief, I go through what the state is saying is not defending her choice to excuse this. Now, this is, of course, the opposite of the usual situation. Defense counsel wants this person off the jury. Your Honor, I'm selecting number 15 because she indicated two things about herself, including her professionalism. She's a profession and a job. I gave that a sick. She is very involved with her sorority and with a pretty strict CrossFit regimen. The defense perspective is that she's very regimented. And the court goes on to say she didn't say anything about being rigid about CrossFit, whereas she had called herself a CrossFit addict. She just said it's an activity, which is not true. And then the court goes on about how she's the sorority that she mentioned, and actually defense counsel mentions that it's the fact that she's involved in a sorority as an adult, which counsel finds bizarre, which she's entitled to find bizarre or normal or great. But she, as I've mentioned, jury selection is an art, not a science. But then the court says, aha, that's a traditionally African-American sorority. And there's no evidence defense counsel knows that. So this is getting rather Byzantine at this point, I think. And it's an example of clear error. The court had forgotten that she'd called herself a CrossFit addict. The court does not remember what she had said. I also need to point out something that I didn't catch when I was writing the reply brief, which is that the state seems to be arguing that there is something more here. It seems to be trying to defend this choice as prima facie discrimination. And not exactly a direct way, but I do need to correct a statement that's made in the brief, which is that the state has said that defense counsel did not ask this juror any questions, which shows that this was he just wanted her off the jury because of her, the color of her skin. But she did ask her a question, and so did the state, and she didn't talk any more or less than anyone else. So that's not like someone's sitting here quietly and has been excused. Regarding the argument about the cases where appellate courts have seen fit to affirm based on, I guess just to assume that, okay, we're just going to say that a prima facie case has been shown, now we're going to look at the explanation, and the courts affirm. These are all cases affirming, going back to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court's Hernandez case. They all are affirming. So no one's looking at the precise issue that's before this court right now, and that is handled by Evans, and that's handled by Vreen in the Court of Appeals. The Vreen Court of Appeals case, Division III, goes through the facts more than occurs in the Supreme Court case. We have argued in the reply brief the reasons that the Vreen Supreme Court of Washington case should stand, and that mandate automatic reversal. Peremptory challenges are very important under state law.
Thank you very much. The next